It is Friday, October the 14th. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us today. Coming up, remembering Thailand's king.
We will reign with righteousness for the benefit and happiness of the Siamese people. And he's been a person that's been recognized by the Thais as having, you know, high principles.
We'll also find out why one city in the UK is considered a no-go zone, preparing for natural disasters, plus a Nobel Prize for singer-songwriter Bob Dylan. Hello, everyone. I'm Steve Norman. The world's longest reigning monarch, Thailand's King Bhumibol Adulyadet, has died. He was 88. During his reign, the king was a symbol of unity, stability, and tradition in his country. But the monarchy's moral authority has sometimes been interrupted by politics. Reporter Ron Corbin tells my colleague Ira Melman, King Bhumibol was quite popular among his people, especially in rural areas.
When he came back to Bangkok and ascended the throne from the 1950, he took some time to find his way into the role of the king and His Majesty. And so what he did over a long period of time was to travel throughout the country and to villages and to meeting people, promoting development projects and programs. He was known as one who was with a science degree. He was very close to the people, especially in the early years of his reign.
What does his death do? I mean, he's been ill for a long time, so one would think that Thai authorities and all the mechanisms of the Thai royal family would have kind of plotted out what happens next. What do you hear is going on? What's the next step?
The next step will be the decision on the heir, and at the moment, as far as we understand it, the heir apparent is his son, Prince Vajiralongkorn. So that seems to be the case. That's been reported for some time that King recognized or designated his son as the heir apparent in 1972. When he invested him as a crown prince. And there doesn't seem to have been that much change from there. His sister, Princess Sirintorn, was also recognized with a similar title, and some people had believed that it may have been left to either the advisor to the king, the Privy Council, that may have made the final decision in regard to who would succeed.
How symbolic is being the king of Thailand? The government of Thailand has gone through some major changes, as we know, over the past few years, giving more and more power to the military. How involved and how influential is the king of Thailand?
King Bhumibol was influential not because he was involved with the politics directly, but because of his particular personal presence. Also, he was one that maintained a level of moral righteousness. He said when he ascended the throne back in 1950. That he said, we will reign with righteousness for the benefit and happiness of the Siamese people. And he's been a person that's been recognized by the Thais as having, you know, high principles. So he's had a very special place in people's, you know, hearts and minds for a long period of time.
So one would theorize then logically that the death of the king would not lead to any big changes as far as the Thai government is concerned.
Well, apparently the military government that took power in May 2014 there would be no change. One of the reasons that many say that the military took power then was to ensure that there was a smooth transition People were even then aware of what was coming. The king was not in good health. And so their role, the military, was always to be there to, you know, steady the country as it moves through this delicate phase.
That's Ron Corbin speaking with International Edition's Ira Melman. Later in the program, G. Abby Lee will join us to look at the social media response to the king's death. And among the other stories we're following here on VOA, in Nigeria, 21 of the Chibok girls are freed, UN appointing a new secretary general, plus a Brexit vote facing challenge in a UK high court. Expanded coverage of those stories a lot more at voanews.com and on the VOA mobile app. Nigerian officials recently declared several British cities no-go zones where immigrants, many of them Muslim, dominate, and using these areas as examples of why Hungary should not accept migrants or refugees. One of the cities mentioned, Peterborough in Britain, has protested and has begun to receive Syrian refugees after a careful debate among city leaders. VOA Europe correspondent Luis Ramirez has the story.
Suad El Marsoumi, an asylum seeker, defies stereotypes of the newcomer who will not assimilate and who will take more than give.
I'm graduate from the College of Economic in Iraq. I have a business administration degree in my country, and I was work in Ministry of Finance in Iraq.
While she waits for asylum, Suad offers free sewing lessons at this refugee center in Peterborough.
Until now, I cannot work because I still wait the decision of Home Office to my case.
Peterborough has a history of welcoming migrants and refugees. The first large wave came in the 1950s.
The city has a heart, a real culture to it, which is one of acceptance. The debate wasn't about whether or not we should accept Syrian refugees. The debate in the first instance was really, do we have the finances to support any new arrivals?
Support for things like assimilation, something the city struggled to help with in the past. In Suad's neighbourhood, English is not often heard on the street.
Cultural assimilation isn't a problem when you've got small numbers of migrants, or in this case, refugees.
The consensus on Syrian refugees was to offer a careful, managed welcome, 25 families over 5 years. Donations of furniture and food have poured in.
We will help anyone that has a need. We'll help anyone whether they have faith, no faith, no matter what background they come from.
If you can't speak English, we are able to help you to speak English so you move into the employment. For the job seeker allowance to the route to employment, we can help you.
Such reassurances do not appease everyone. A few residents told us they oppose taking more newcomers, but wouldn't do so on camera. One thing all sides agree on is that Peterborough is not a no-go zone, as Hungarian officials argued. Incidentally, one of the most visible groups in this immigrant neighborhood is Hungarians. With some Peterborough natives apparently happy at the prospect of more migrants, they are also taking advantage of what those already here have to offer.
It's brilliant coming here. So much to learn, so many people, new people to meet, so many people to help in the world. We all get on great as a team, don't we?
One stitch at a time, Suad has gone from one who receives help to one who gives it.
I won't feel I'm human. I'm still human. I'm still in the life.
Luis Ramirez, VOA News, Peterborough, England.
You can keep up to date on the plight of refugees and migrants seeking a new life in Europe by going to our website. Again, you can find us at voanews.com. This is VOA.
Do you know the political process that determines who the next president of the United States will be? Tune in to VOA's extensive coverage of the campaigns, the voting, and the final tallying to find out how citizens choose their next president. Right here on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is VOA's International Edition. This year's World Disasters Report warns that thousands of lives are being lost and property destroyed from natural disasters because governments and local communities are failing to prepare for these potentially calamitous events. Lisa Schlein reports now from the launch of the report at the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in Geneva.
There is no way to stop a natural disaster from occurring, but there are ways to prevent it from becoming a catastrophic event. Authors of the World Disasters Report note many natural disasters, such as hurricanes, floods, and drought, are related to climate change and can be predicted. Therefore, they argue, governments can lessen their impact by investing in preparedness and measures to reduce disaster risk. El-Hajj Assi is Secretary General of the International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies. He says the effort put into early warning alerts and early response can determine whether a hazard will be a disaster or not.
It makes sense not to invest in preparedness. It makes sense to invest in resilience because not only is it a moral thing to do, but it is also a smart thing to do from an economic point of view, and more importantly, it saves lives, and that is the ultimate, you know, most important goal.
Last year, the report says 108 million people were affected by disasters. It notes the number and scale of disasters triggered by natural hazards are increasing. Co-editor of the report, David Sanderson, says when it comes to humanitarian aid, business as usual is not an option.
Something like $100 billion has been spent in disasters between 1991 and 2010. Two-thirds of that has gone into response. 40 cents of every $100 spent is only spent on disastrous reduction. It's a drop in the ocean.
Forced migration is at its highest level since World War II, with over 65 million forcibly displaced people from war-torn countries such as Syria, Yemen, and South Sudan. Authors of the report warn this forced migration is likely to increase in coming years as climate change kicks in and people seek refuge from environmental disasters. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
U.S. space agency NASA's made an announcement about some new discoveries by the Hubble Space Telescope. International Edition's Lori London talks with Greg Redfern from NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California.
Really big news broke from the Hubble Space Telescope, which involved an international collaboration and a series of observations that says that the number of galaxies, and for our listeners, galaxies are island concentrations of stars like our own Milky Way galaxy. We see them everywhere we look, but the news said that the number of observable galaxies in our universe grew by a factor of 10. Astronomers now say there are a minimum of 2 trillion, that's with a T, 2 trillion galaxies in our observable universe. Amazing news.
That's just in our observable universe.
Just in our observable universe. And that also has the adjective minimally, which means that there's probably more, but we have to get a new generation of telescopes, including the James Webb Space Telescope, due for launch in another year or so, the 30-meter telescope in Hawaii, and the 39-meter telescope in Chile, to be able to do deeper observations into the early universe. When astronomers look into the nighttime sky, we're looking back in time. Even the moon is 1.3 seconds old when we look at it. And when we look at galaxies, they're farther and farther back in time. And this series of observations, were looking back deep, deep into time and showed a lot more galaxies. An astronomer did a 3D mapping of this to come up with this staggering number, and they truly believe that when these larger, more powerful telescopes come online and are observationally active, we're really going to learn a lot more about our universe.
Why is this finding so important?
It just shows that the universe, the observable universe in which we are a part, and the galaxy in which we live, is part of such a greater and larger structure and concern, far more magnificent than we thought. Just when I gave my last lecture on the universe and you, I was quoting the best available knowledge we had, approximately 200 billion galaxies. Now I can unequivocally say there are over 2 trillion plus galaxies, minimum number in the universe. And you know what, Lori? What goes along with that are what are the number of planets that exist in the observable universe. We now know of almost 4,000 planets beyond our own solar system we call exoplanets. And astronomers have said, well, you know, you got to figure a minimum of 10 major-sized planets for every star in a galaxy. Well, if we just now gone from 200 billion to 2 trillion galaxies, and you figure the number of stars in each of those galaxies that has exoplanets, almost an incalculable number of planets that exist out there amongst those trillions of galaxies.
That's Greg Redfern. He is with NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, and he was speaking with my colleague Lori London.
From the ordinary to the extraordinary, you never know what in the world will happen next.
The world is watching with grave concern as Russia has positioned its military.
You should not allow anyone to deprive you of your right to determine the future.
We are using this against terrorist groups coming from Turkey.
With a landing on
civilians. Sponsored by, no, we are not killing civilians.
With all that's happening, VOA News works to keep you up to date every hour of every day. So when you want to know what's new, you know what to do. Tune in your radio or click on the internet. World News on the hour, every hour, or at your convenience at voanews.com.
As I mentioned earlier, we're going to take a look now at how the death of Thailand's King Bhumibol Adulyadet is trending on social media. G. Abby Lee is here with the latest. Hey, G.
Hi, Steve. What a sad day for Thailand. People on the scene, reporters, and the public alike are tweeting photos of the grieving Thai people in front of the Sirirach Hospital where he passed away. In Washington, the U.S. State Department tweeted President Barack Obama's statement on the king's passing, and in New York, the U.K. mission to the U.N. also shared photos of a one-minute silence in his honor at the General Assembly Hall. And Steve, I also learned something quite interesting. A Western media outlet shared an infographic that showed a photo of the late king with his name written next to it. Now, the most liked reply to that tweet reads, "It's not proper to put the headline text aligned with our king's head. Please remove that text for respect." That's because in Thailand, there are strict rules against perceived disrespect for the royal family.
That's very interesting, G. Anything else out there trending?
This is also about change in leadership, but this time at the United Nations. The UN appointed Portugal's former Prime Minister Antonio Guterres as the next Secretary General. He will succeed South Korea's Ban Ki-moon and begin his service on January 1st. The different accounts of many UN agencies share that news, and here's an example from the main UN account. His political instincts are those of the UN: cooperation for common good and shared responsibility for people and the planet.
Let me guess, that phone that's been in the news so much gotta still be hot out there on the social media scene.
Last but not least, South Korea's electronics giant Samsung is still in the hot seat for its Galaxy Note 7 phones. The company supplied fireproof boxes and safety gloves to the Galaxy Note 7 customers because that model has been known to catch fire in some instances. People are sharing photos of the state-of-the-art return kit on social media, and many are wondering, how much it would have cost the company to include the thermally insulated box. Steve, back to you.
Hey, many thanks to you, G. International Edition's G. Abby Lee. By the way, you can follow G on Twitter at G. Abby Lee. I'm there as well at VOA Norman. Our program, International Edition, can be found on Twitter at VOA underscore IE. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
A sharp and round blade at the end of a long handle called a koa is used to carve up an agave plant used to make tequila.
Peligroso.
Harvester Octavio Fernandez says it's a hard and dangerous job. You have to be careful. It's dangerous since you can slice your feet and your knees. But harvesters or jimadores like Fernandez are not well paid, says tequila seller David Suro.
A quality tequila, 12 bottles of 750 milliliters, in the United States, average about $420. Less than a dollar goes to a jimador.
Their skill is required to cut the agave core correctly, and agave harvesting accounts for 1 million work days a year. But jimadores have been fleeing the poorly paid profession. Machines are on the way, but until they arrive, manual labor is still required. And some jimadores are starting to see better wages as a result. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
Gotta watch out for those agaves, don't you? You wouldn't want one falling on your head. You know what? This is VOA's International Edition. Legendary American musician Bob Dylan has now won the 2016 Nobel Prize in Literature. First songwriter to receive this award. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald joins my colleague Jim Stevenson to talk about it all.
On top of being a musical legend and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Bob Dylan, at the age of 75, has won the Nobel Prize for Literature. The Swedish Academy made the announcement on Thursday. They described his work as having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition. Dylan is the first U.S. artist to win the Literature Nobel since Toni Morrison did it back in 1993. Mm-hmm. And he's also the first literature laureate whose career has primarily involved music. Dylan was long rumored to be a contender, but he was far down the list of this year's favorites. So he was kind of a dark horse, and he came through. Bob Dylan is going to receive an 18-karat gold medal and a check for about $925,000.
Not
which
bad.
Ain't bad, even when you're Bob Dylan. So congratulations, Bobby. He's pretty phenomenal when you get right down to it. He is 75, so the Nobel Committee may have taken that into consideration, mm-hmm. at least in the back of their minds. He did have some serious health problems, I guess about 20 years ago. He came close to dying. But ever since then, he has embarked on what is often referred to as an endless tour. I mean, the man is always on the road. And still releasing albums, too. His latest, his 37th studio album, Fallen Angels, came out in May. He performed at the Desert Trip Festival last weekend. And then this weekend, and of course, Desert Trip is being held out in Indio, California, and it brings together some of the greatest classic rock acts, the Stones, Paul McCartney, The Who, Neil Young, they're all there, and Dylan's there too. He's currently touring the U.S. on his own. This leg will extend through November 23rd. So even more so than the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan is showing that you can be a senior citizen and still have a very active musical career, and this might be the cherry on top. He is now a Literature Nobel laureate. So
my
congratulations
goodness.
To Bob Dylan.
So this prize is more for his body of work over time.
It is, yes. They take it as literature. It's like, obviously, they're song lyrics, but the Nobel Committee says you can read it and also receive that enjoyment from it.
There's so many great songwriters through the years. This perhaps opens the door for more.
Well, people have been mentioning Leonard Cohen from Canada, who was a published poet before he became a musician. Leonard is 82. Mm-hmm. He has a new album out, and I could see him winning some literary prizes because he's very much in the vein of Bob Dylan, a different sort of artist, but again, a literary artist who works in the musical medium.
If they had a Nobel Prize for countdowns of songs, Ray McDonald certainly would be there with the medal on. Ray, our top 20 countdown host each week, and very vibrant as well. Check out his literary works on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thank you, Ray.
All right, Jim.
How does it feel to be on your own? Like a rolling stone.
Rolling Stone, huh? Hey, it turns out that fans decked out in purple shirts and scarves turned out to groove to a revival of Prince's 1980s Minneapolis sound. It was a tribute concert honoring the late megastar on Thursday night. Prince's younger sister, Tyka Nelson, described the concert as very public, a great event to honor her brother. Stevie Wonder was there, Chaka Khan. Prince, you'll remember, died of an accidental painkiller overdose. He was 57 years old in April when that happened. Many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on the Voice of America for International Edition. Always good to have you here. Latest world news is just around the corner. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Jimmy Cook, I'm Steve Norman in Washington. Have a great Friday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Economic progress for Nigeria's most vulnerable population improved in October, thanks to a new agreement between the United States of America and the government of Nigeria. On October 5th, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, announced $92.73 million in additional developmental assistance to support the five-year $2.3 billion agreement signed with the Nigerian government in 2015. The assistance agreement announced in Abuja brings the total of developmental assistance provided to $474.74 million. This funding will continue to help Nigeria reduce extreme poverty in a more stable democratic society. Activities will stimulate inclusive economic growth, promote a healthier, more educated population, and strengthen good governance. We are pleased to contribute additional funding in support of the agreement signed with the Nigerian government in 2015, said USAID Mission Director Michael Harvey. With their leadership, we know this funding will have a significant impact on the well-being of Nigerians, he added. In an effort to align Nigeria's development plans with sector-specific strategies, USAID collaborated with the Nigerian Ministry of Budget and National Planning, the Nigerian Ministries of Health, Agriculture, Power, and Education, and state-level government counterparts to structure the agreement, which is in place until 2020. In addition to the developmental funding, the United States provides humanitarian assistance to people affected by the ongoing conflict and severe food insecurity in Nigeria and throughout the Lake Chad Basin. Since fiscal year 2015, the United States has provided more than $366 million in humanitarian assistance and continues to be the single largest bilateral humanitarian donor to the region. About USAID. USAID partners to end extreme poverty and promote resilient, democratic societies while advancing our security and prosperity. In its partnership with Nigeria, the United States strengthens social stability through social services, supports transparent and accountable governance, promotes a more market-led economy, and enhances Nigeria's capacity as a responsible regional and trade partner. The United States is proud to work with its partner Nigeria to promote the prosperity and well-being of the people of Nigeria, the region, and the world.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is for what's the universe?